Weather can leave you breathless, whether it's a gorgeous halo around the moon or the damage caused by a tornado. It really impacts everything we do, and we are lucky to have the weather guys come by every month, the last Monday of the month, to talk about weather, climate, explain things we've seen, point out things that we might want to watch for, and generally just keep us smart about what's going on around us. John Martin is professor and chair of the Atmospheric and Oceanic Sciences Department at UW-Madison. John, great to see you.
Thank you, Judith. Good to be here.
John was just taking a sip of champagne as I was introducing
him.
And Steve Ackerman is director of the Cooperative Institute for Meteorological Satellite Studies at UW-Madison and is also a professor of atmospheric sciences. Steve, great to see you.
It's great to be here.
And nice to be closing out 2012 with the weather guys. And I know people always have lots of questions and comments for you, so please give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email us at talk@wpr.org or put a comment or a question or a weather photo. We love when you share those with us on our Facebook page. That's The Larry Mueller Show. So we recently had a pretty impressive winter storm that affected a lot of the state. Did it live up to the hype of the snowpocalypse and the Snowmageddon?
We got the precept that people generally predicted.
It was right on. Yeah. I mean, that band of heavy snow from just south of Green Bay down toward Des Moines or Richland Center anyway was exactly what was forecasted a day or two in advance. It was an excellent forecast. Again, that's one of the stories of 2012, if you ask me, is that time after time, short and medium range forecasts, especially the medium range, caught me by surprise, were right on in big events.
And this time, the National Weather Service beat the European ones.
Yes,
they had it initially
correct.
Too far to the south. So.
That's correct.
We don't get to do that often.
Well, and it's interesting because, you know, I hope you guys won't take offense at this, but often when I see a forecast for, you know, 20 inches of snow, I think, well, if we're lucky, we're going to get about 8. And this time, like you said, John, it was really
right
spot on.
And to make in Madison, Wisconsin, anywhere in Dane County, southern part of our state, to make a forecast for 20 inches of snow, you're putting your neck way out because that's a record amount.
Yep.
And nobody forecasts records. You just don't do that because they, by their nature, they're almost singular events. Right on.
Yeah.
I just couldn't be happier.
Well, and John, you made the comment that, and I know a lot of people were talking about this, that Madison schools, I think a lot of other schools, but Madison schools seem to be the last ones to usually call snow days. They actually canceled school for Thursday on Wednesday evening.
Right. This is a new era. And this is, again, a congratulations to modern numerical weather prediction and forecasters who use that output because, you know, all of us growing up, I grew up in northeast Massachusetts where it snows a lot in the wintertime. And I never, one time in my life, I remember school being canceled before a flake of snow even fell. And in fact, in that instance, the storm that was forecasted was way offshore the next morning. So it was a beautiful sunny morning and there was no school. So this is now the second time, I think, in the last couple of years where such a call has been made. And it's been right on. And it's just, you know, it's
a
little revolution that's under the table. But if people are paying attention, they might notice that. Yeah.
And so who or what do we have to thank for these much more accurate medium-term forecasts?
I'd say there's three major streams of revolution that have gone on in the last 25 years. One of them is computer power has gotten, of course, much more impressive. Everybody knows that. And that is a major contribution to enhanced and improved forecasts in the short and the medium range. And medium range means 3 to 5 days. Secondly, not second in terms of importance, but certainly secondly, and it's been building momentum for 50 years, is better understanding of how the atmosphere works in the middle latitudes and how various processes that contribute to these storms do it. And then I think probably primarily, maybe arguably secondarily, has been the influence of satellite information, which, as Steve knows, of course, his whole career is devoted to that and as an world expert. And that's that contributes a huge amount of new information into the forecast enterprise that wasn't there 25 years ago.
Yeah, yes. that's particular with Sandy. There's been experiments now where they go back and take out the satellite data. Mm. And instead of making that odd left turn that it did, it actually goes out to sea.
Very interesting.
Well, and I know in the past, Steve, you've talked about how we are looking at a potential, how would you say it, like a gap in satellite knowledge because of how funding for the satellite programs has or has not been allocated. Tell us more about that.
Yeah, so currently, right now, we're in the golden age as far as the U.S. goes in terms of satellite observations. But they are expensive to put up. And because of some financial crises that are going on, if you could put it that way, we're going to have less satellites, U.S. satellites, up there. But fortunately, the Chinese, the Japanese, the Europeans are putting up satellites, so we may not have as many as we do right now. But the fact that we collaborate and share that data is very, very important. Mm.
We're talking with the weather guys, John Martin and Steve Ackerman, looking back at 2012 and looking forward at 2013. I'm Judith Sears-Poisson, sitting in for Larry Mueller. And our phones are full right now, but you can always send us an email at talk@wpr.org or post a question or comment on our Facebook page. And let's go to the phone since we have so many folks waiting to talk with you, too. Jeff in Madison is up first. Hi, Jeff.
Good morning, gentlemen. Good morning, Judith. I was just wanted to remark, I want to make a comment about the forecasting, but also to ask you guys if you've made any changes to your long-range weather forecast for January, February, March. But, yeah, I'm a pretty much of a junkie of NWS, the National Weather Service, was online, and they really started to advertise a storm the Saturday before. Mm-hmm. I started to see the headlines, and I kept thinking, well, this is extraordinary, but the chances of them being this accurate all the way to the final 24-hour forecast is not very good, because it could end up in Ohio by the time, or up in northern Wisconsin. But it was remarkable, and I won't beat the drum there except to say that in my 60s now and following this since I was a boy, this is as much fun as I'm sure you guys are having with it.
Oh, yeah. It's a whole new world.
I'm not the scientist that you guys are, but I've self-taught, and it's just been a remarkable run here. And with the advent of the Internet, it's just unbelievable. And I just wanted to get if there's been any updates on your thoughts for temperature and precipitation for our area of the Midwest for the remainder of the winter.
Yeah, I looked at that yesterday before coming over here. And in the next 2 weeks, they're still going with an above normal temperatures. I'm not sure about what's happening precipitation, equal chances of being above, below, or at normal. Quite surprising to me that the temperature, even though it's this past week has seemed so cold, it's actually normal. This is the normal type temperature that we've been having.
We've been above normal for
For the month. We're like 4 degrees above normal for the month.
And we were 13 and a half or 14 degrees above normal by the middle of December, because we had that incredible December 3rd where 65 degrees with clouds all day long. All-time high December temperature. And we've just kind of maybe cut into it a little bit to level it. So, I think we're going to – it looks for sure in the longer-range forecast that goes from 3 to 10 days, we will not get cold in the first week of January, except these next few days we'll have some cold mornings. But as the whole first week of January unfolds through the 9th or so, it's going to be, at or well above normal, I think, for most of the states. So.
And the main driving force for the seasonal forecast as we look for early spring, late winter, is the El Nino. And that's looked to be neutrals, which means we really don't have a really good signal to, lay our hat on for a forecast.
Okay. Well, Linda in Marshfield is hoping you'll look even further out than that. Let's check with her. Hi, Linda.
Good morning. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Yeah, same to you.
Glad to listen to the weather guy as always. Was wondering, the previous caller stole my thunder, but I was wondering, any prediction for a dry summer like we had last year?
Was that an intentional pun saying he stole your thunder?
I will forecast that it'll be warmer than it is now.
Really going out on a limb.
He's a brave young man.
No, summer, looking out to the summer now, it's pretty hard. It's pretty far out there. In the springtime, NOAA was actually looking at still drought-type conditions for most of Wisconsin, except for the southern, southeastern part of Wisconsin. But most of the rest of it, they're looking to be in a drought into the spring.
Yeah, and we're trying to understand this today. I was at a coffee shop with some friends, and they were talking about how they'd read somewhere, and I can't tell you where it was, that this nearly 20-inch snowfall in many locations around Dane County will not really do much to alleviate the drought conditions. And at first it seems a little bit paradoxical, but on the other hand, much of the water substance is above ground and subject to evaporation and sublimation, and so it never really does sink into the ground. You need to have repeated events. And it looks like, well, I mean, everybody knows up till this point, the only precipitation event of this whole winter season has been that one storm. And that looks like it'll be the case all the way through about the 10th, at least, of January.
Wow.
Yeah.
So that's 3 weeks plus with one precipitation event. Mm-hmm. But to look forward into the summer with any confidence is probably not prudent. We couldn't say that for sure.
Yeah. All right. And let's take a quick call from Joe in Wausau. Hi, Joe.
Hi.
Go ahead.
You talked about how accurate the prediction for that big storm was last week, but my local weathermen predicted an insignificant system. They said 1 inch of snow, maybe two, and we got 6 inches of snow here in Wausau last Saturday.
Yeah.
And does it just depend on who the weather person is getting their information from? Or
I suppose there's some dependence on that. But also, too, as far north as Wausau on this storm, you're kind of right on the border between being in the heavy snow band and being out of the game almost entirely. And so that call on the border of the snow band is more difficult
one
than the one that's right in the middle of it. But I'll say this, even as the prior caller said, it was mentioned on Saturday, 5 days in advance. There were times where the forecast from the Weather Service was still overblowing the potential on Monday and Tuesday, and we thought it should have been pulled back Monday morning quarterback.
And we'll talk more about that after this look at the news from NPR. Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for another visit, the last of 2012, with our weather guys. Steve Ackerman is director of the Cooperative Institute for Meteorological Satellite Studies at UW-Madison and is a professor of atmospheric sciences. Steve, great to see you.
Great to be here.
And John Martin is professor and chair of atmospheric and oceanic sciences at UW-Madison. John, always a pleasure.
Great to be with you, Judy.
And I will keep in mind your request to always have Jessica Bell on right before you,
yes.
So you get some of the leftovers.
Yes,
we've been toasting
idea.
The end to another great year of talking about the weather. And you can call in with your questions for Steve and John at 1-800-642-1234. You can also email us at talk@wpr.org. Our on-air producer, oops, maybe I shouldn't have had that glass of champagne. Our on-air producer, Rachel Owens, will be happy to get your calls and emails to us. We want to take a look back at 2012 as far as the weather and climate events in Wisconsin. Specifically, we talked about the recent snowstorm. But, you know, looking back, and it feels a lot longer ago than 9 months ago, but that incredibly, bizarrely warm March. I mean, was that a record-breaking month?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that was just incredible.
Like blew it out of the water,
record-breaking? And not just here. I mean,
across the nation. Level 48, anyway.
Yeah, it was an unbelievable month. To put it in perspective, over the last 100 years, I think, or more, in Madison, there had been 5 days in the month of March. So there's 100 years, approximately, times 31 days in March. 3,000 prior days in March, 5 had been 80 degrees or above. In March of 2012, we had 5 days at 80 degrees or above.
Wow.
So we equaled 100 years' worth of over 80-degree days in one month. And in fact, they were in one 8-day period. So it was simply unbelievable.
Who needs to go to Florida for spring
break? Well, no, there was no need to do it. In fact, it was warmer here in a couple of days during spring break than it was in some of the places to the south.
But then the problem was in April, boom, we had a cold spell that came and really hurt the cherries, I think.
Yeah,
and
cherries.
A lot of fruit trees.
Cherries and apples were just decimated.
Yeah. That was amazing.
So we had that really strange spring. And then, of course, Hurricane Sandy, which we think of as having affected the East Coast much more. But it did have some impacts on us here.
Yeah, we got some big winds on Lake Michigan as it came stripping right down from north, right down to south, generated almost 20-foot waves on Lake Michigan. And then the cirrus outflow, so the high clouds made of ice crystals, coupled with the full moon, gave us some beautiful halos and moon dogs, these little bright spots on the sides of the moon, which is the first time I had ever seen a moon dog.
Wow.
I was driving and I pulled over and I got out my camera and it was gone.
No. Amazing.
Because otherwise you would have posted it on our
Facebook page. Exactly.
And then June up north, there was tremendous flooding, too.
Oh, right. Yeah, right. Up in the Duluth area. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we had those big sinkholes develop. That was a nasty flooding.
In our summertime here in Madison, we made a run at the all-time highest number of days at 90 degrees or above. The record was 40 in 1955.
Yeah. I'm okay with missing that record.
And I thought we had it in the bag. It reminded me of the snow thing from 2008-2009. Mm-hmm. We only had 8 to go with August 1st dawning, and most Augusts have about 8 of them in a year where you get a lot of days over 90, and we just came one short. We got one in September. but we didn't get enough.
It was 39
instead
of 40.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So an incredible year weather-wise. Mm-hmm. Absolutely incredible.
And then we had, of course, the drought, which affected the entire state and is still continuing.
Still continuing,
in a lot of parts of the state. And then just going back to that recent winter storm, one of my favorite weather happenings is thundersnow, and we had...
Thundersnow. Yep, that's right. Which is, It's not, I wouldn't say exceptionally rare, but maybe you hear it once
in
the wintertime. Yeah, it's just fun to hear that and be outside.
And it's especially fun when people who are new to Wisconsin are just, you know, have a notice when they can't believe that they're actually hearing it the first time.
And it snows heavily under those thunderstorms. Yeah. It really does.
So I remember, thunder and lightning snow, I remember.
It's awesome.
Well, we will look at weather events for the nation for the last year, but let's go to the phones because we have some folks waiting to talk with you too. Carl in Beaver Dam is up first. Hi, Carl.
Morning. There is a group called the Arctic Methane Emergency Group, and they're claiming that we're actually in a state of planetary emergency due to the unprecedented methane release from the Arctic seafloor hydrates, where it's been frozen in place for millions of years. And, of course, methane is a very powerful greenhouse gas, much, much worse than CO2. We have around 5 gigatons of methane in the atmosphere currently, and there are thousands of gigatons of it on the seafloor alone, and that's more than what's contained in the peat bogs of Siberia or the tundra permafrost. Russian scientists recently reported seeing methane bubbling up from hundreds of square kilometers of the Arctic Sea near Siberia, and of course, the Arctic Sea cover is declining quickly. But here's my question, and it disturbs me quite a bit. Have we passed a tipping point and are now in a runaway greenhouse situation where the warming caused by the methane feeds back, causes even more methane to be released at a faster and faster rate?
Let's see what Steve Ackerman has to say.
Yeah, I'd say we certainly have hit a tipping point with regard to not being able to go back, in the sense that global climate change is occurring, and we're seeing it in various places all over the world. There was just a recent article either in Nature or in Science about Antarctica, sections of that really warming up as well. And methane release, if we're going to get a huge methane release, as you said, that is a very powerful greenhouse gas because it absorbs infrared radiation in the in a wavelength that the atmosphere is generally transparent to, and so that could cause additional warming. I wouldn't call it a runaway effect yet. Usually, we use the term runaway when we think of things like Venus, where the carbon dioxide on Venus has really caused Venus to be really, really hot. So we haven't quite hit that, but we're at a point now where, we have to be looking at adaptation of the changes that we're going to be seeing.
Yeah, and I think Steve's point about runaway being maybe a little bit of an excessive adjective here is a good one. Almost every physical system has inherent feedbacks within it. And so if you warm the planet up fractionally, you're going to probably create circumstances that might allow for further warming. But then there may be mitigating circumstances that come in and kind of work against that. One prime example for our climate system is clouds. So one of the things that might happen in a warmer climate is it might be more water vapor in the atmosphere, which is a very potent greenhouse gas. But as soon as it converts itself into cloud droplets or ice crystals and becomes clouds, then it has a cooling effect. And we're not sure if it's a net cooling effect or not, across the globe, across a global average. But it certainly seems to contribute toward a cooling effect. So there's all kinds of interplay between various aspects of a broad scale, a set of natural processes. And that's what makes the problem so interesting, but also so complicated, is that you have to try and understand those as best we can. But certainly we're pushing the system in ways that are, I think, pushing it towards warming up and enhancing the warming. That's for sure.
Thanks for that call, Carl. And let's go to Mike and Stevens Point. Hi, Mike.
Hi, how you doing?
Good.
I live in Chicago, but I have a place in northern Wisconsin in Minocqua. And when we bought it in 1997, the water levels were pretty high, and they've gradually gone down about a foot and a half. And some of the people who've lived up there a long time have said that it's been a cycle, that the water levels are high about every 10 years or so. I was just wondering if what we're seeing now, if we expect it to start coming back up again through a little bit more snow and rainfall, or are we seeing the greenhouse effect and things like that are part of the atmosphere that level's never gonna, those levels are never gonna come up on this kind of lake. When I look at the maps, it seems like in the old day, when I bought the place, weather in Wisconsin was a lot more, Madison would get rain and snow and so would the North Woods. Now, it seems like sometimes the weather stops at about Madison, and in the North Woods, we're not getting as much snow cover and things like that as we used to. Can you give me an opinion on that?
Well, I'll talk about lake levels and then let John deal with the more difficult question. You know, down here, too, we live on the mouth of the Yahara as it goes into Lake Mendota, and I'll tell you, man, it is really low. We've seen rocks now that we have never seen. I mean, we only lived there for 7 years, but it is really, really low. And hopefully this is part of a cycle, but I don't see it coming up this year. I mean, as we were saying earlier, the precipitation for the next couple of months is either going to be at normal or below normal, and that's not going to help replenish it. And the same thing with the Great Lakes. The Lake Michigan is now at its lowest level that it's been since 1998, I think is what I was looking back to. So the Great Lakes are also below normal. So we're hoping, we're going to need increased precipitation in order to bring the lake levels back up.
Yeah, and for lakes that are smaller than the Great Lakes, there's probably even more complicated things going on. For instance, the length of ice cover in the wintertime is a major factor in some of these smaller lakes, because let's just say you fractionally reduce the amount of time that there's an ice cover on top of the lake by, say, 5 days over season. That gives five more days of evaporation that if snowfall and other kinds of winter and spring season precipitation doesn't fill in the gap and make up that difference, you're going to gradually have less and less water in that lake, and it's hard to make it up. Even if you have average precipitation, if you have five extra days of evaporation, you're in trouble as you go 10, 15 years into the future. So one of the consequences of a warming planet and a warming climate at high latitudes could very well be seven fewer days of ice cover 20 years from now, and that's a major water loss in small lakes.
And so, actually, that's a really good point, because over the last 100 years, we've lost like a week to 2 weeks of ice cover on the
that's
inland
right.
lakes.
Yeah. Lake Mendota and other inland-sized lakes, not the Great Lakes type, but other big lakes.
So, thanks for that call, Mike. And let's go to Mark next in Green Bay. Hi, Mark.
Oh, hi. Thanks for the opportunity. Germane to that last call, actually, Lake Michigan is almost at record lows from 1964, not just 1998.
So going back that far, I hadn't looked back that far. But
yeah, that was the record low back then, and we were a tenth of an inch above that last year or last month, so we're probably heading to record lows. But that's not my question. I was wondering about Superstorm Sandy. Had a blowback that came right along the edge of the Brown County, Kewaunee County line, Lake Michigan over here, and it stayed there for 36 hours. We had just unbelievable atmospheric phenomena. There were the halos you're talking about, rings, sun dogs, arcs that were back like 40 or 50 degrees away from the sun. And we also saw that arc on the moon, on the full moon that night. So we're wondering, is there a different type of crystal that comes out of salt water from the ocean that would give different phenomena in the sky, or was it just that it was such a big system?
That's a great question.
Yeah, it is. It doesn't have to do with the salt water. It does has to do with the ice crystal. You need a very specific type of ice crystal, and you can't get too thick of a cloud. If you get too thick of a cloud, then those arcs that you were talking about don't appear. They get what we call multiple scattering. You have too much interaction with too many particles. But you're right, man. It was some great optical phenomena during those 2 days or so.
And that was a big cloud canopy of varying types of clouds with that storm. I mean, the storm center itself never got as far west as Pittsburgh, I don't think, and yet the cloud canopy was all the way across to, you know, half of our state. It's a huge, huge cloud canopy and in varying thicknesses.
And the optical phenomena that people saw, and I missed some of it, but some people sent some photographs that we're actually looking to put on the cover of our next edition of the book, which was great. And it's the type of optical phenomena that you generally see in Antarctica, because they get those very long ice crystals, which is called diamond dust. It actually occurs on the ground. And we generally don't get that up here. But it was yeah, I was very excited to see moon dogs. I've never seen moon dogs before.
Well, and speaking of interesting phenomena to take a look at, there's a photo on the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page posted by Dennis, and it's actually from the UW MedFlight Facebook page. And it says, on the drive into Madison at about 6:30 a.m., I witnessed a rather dramatic weather phenomenon known as ice pillars. Have you guys ever seen those?
I have once, but not like this.
Yeah, ice pillows, usually you see them with the sun. But what the photo we're looking from is actually looks like it's from light that's coming off the ground.
Right.
Heading upward. And I have never seen that. It almost looks like searchlights.
Right. It looks a lot like searchlights shooting straight up and then flaring out up in the clouds.
Yeah. That's from today or is that from yesterday?
You know, I'm not sure, actually.
Because yesterday we had that sort of really fine snowfall overnight,
right, yeah.
Almost diamond dust type snowfall.
It was posted yesterday.
Yeah, that makes sense. Then you've got some of that stuff falling or blowing around off of trees and so on, or maybe it's actually falling at this time. The sky's cloudy. And those real high surface sources of light can probably illuminate those crystals in a spotlight-looking phenomena. Very interesting, though. Wow.
Yeah, great photo. So if you're interested in seeing it, you can go to the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page. It's posted under recent posts by others. Dennis posted it from the UW MedFlight page. So thanks for that.
Yeah.
And actually, since Superstorm Sandy just came up on the most recent call, let's talk a little more about the big weather and climate stories for 2012 for the nation. Certainly, Superstorm Sandy was at the top of that list.
Yeah, arguably at the top. That was quite an amazing event. Again, 7 days in advance, forecasted to do exactly what it did. Nobody was surprised. Mayor Bloomberg took the trains out of the South Ferry and low latitude stations in Manhattan, saved billions of dollars for the city of New York by doing so. Other examples where the modern numerical weather prediction and forecasting enterprise saved the country billions of dollars and probably countless lives. A revolution. And what an amazing storm. It took that weird westward jog. This was something you can diagnose. My senior undergrads were able to do it. It was able to be part of the solution in the forecast models because of the inclusion of satellite data at the levels that we do now in 2012. Just all across the board, a reason for celebration as a forecasting enterprise.
And talking about the billions of dollars, actually, one note I think, Steve, that you made was that there were 11 $1 billion weather events this year.
Yeah, right. Which, you know, last year there was 14, I think there was. So, yeah, again, weather has a huge impact on our economy.
It
and
really
even
does.
Though Sandy was well forecast and a lot of people were able to do things, a lot of people also got caught. And houses are destroyed and, you know, recuperating from that is... I'm a Long Island boy, and so, yeah, we have relatives who's got flooded out, and now they're trying to deal with that, which is no easy thing to do
in
wintertime.
Right. That is right. Man.
And certainly Sandy is present in our minds because it was so recent, but there was also Hurricane Isaac.
Oh, right, yeah, and the flooding
the prior
associated.
Year, right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, that was this year, too.
Oh, was it?
Yeah, it flooded. They were predicting it to hit New Orleans. It didn't.
Oh, right. I was thinking of the other one from last
Irene.
August.
That was Irene, yeah. Those eyes always get us.
Yeah.
And also, there were some really severe tornado outbreaks in March and April of this year.
Mm-hmm. Right, which is really kind of... Well, what was it? April is really tornado
April's
season,
the beginning
right? So
of
March
it.
Is early.
March is early unless you're in the southern states.
States
then
right,
it's sort of at
right.
the peak of the season. I can't remember where they were this year, but in 2011, the March outbreaks were in Alabama. So that was kind of where they should be.
And also the derecho hit the East Coast.
Oh, right. Yeah. Surprised the East Coast. I remember reading articles about people who never heard of the term derecho.
Yeah, that's right.
It's
that's
like
right.
in the Midwest. It's like. What? Are you kidding me?
Yeah. But again, I believe that was a well-forecasted event. People
it was,
knew that was
it
coming.
Was. There was a lot
that's
of warnings.
The, that's
that
the
went
theme.
Out. That's
the
it
theme.
Really
yeah.
is. It's an inescapable theme of 2012. You know, the atmosphere is throwing interesting things at us, but we are catching on, and it's quite amazing.
All right. Well, let's go back to the phones and Dale in Green Bay. Hi, Dale.
Hello.
Go ahead.
Yes. You know, I was wondering, I've been fascinated with weather science, you know, all my life, and actually, and I studied it in the eighth grade, and we got into more detail, and of course, it's been many years, but we got into the talk about the jet stream and the pressure waves that develop in the middle latitudes that produce these various systems. How much is known about what actually causes the development of these pressure waves that, that get these systems started? I mean, and what causes that?
Yeah, that's a whole branch of the science. It's one of the places where I spend a lot of my time thinking about our science. So the development of mid-latitude weather systems is a still growing science. We're still trying to understand things a little better, but boy, are we in a place now where you look back even 25 or 35 years and you say we know so much more about how the atmosphere works to develop these very disturbances. It's a really exciting place to be thinking and spending your time trying to understand even more. One of the basic ways to think about it is the atmosphere is well, the Earth is showered by radiation unevenly, much more so at the low latitudes than the high latitudes, which means the high latitudes are colder than the low latitudes, and that sets up a situation in which very strong winds, increasingly strong as you leave the ground, can set up in the middle latitudes. And those jet features are, in fact, for a variety of other processes associated with them, are the progenitors of these waves that develop and create weather systems at and near sea level. So it's a really fascinating science to get into.
And let's go next to Sarah in Zion, Illinois. Hi, Sarah.
Hi there. Oh, thanks. I was up in Minneapolis this week over Christmas watching the Weather Channel, which I don't usually, I mean, I don't usually watch that, but they were doing their weather summary, and they said, okay, and here in Boston and up coast, it was all in the 40s. And they said, well, that's seasonal temperatures for the East Coast, and then but there's Arctic chill coming into Minneapolis, and it was 25 degrees, and that's just normal. And I just was thought, why are they saying these things? And am I right? And then I thought, who owns this channel?
Yeah, that's the key.
You go. Follow the money.
Yeah, you know, we often say this, and both John and I are from the East Coast, so I think we can say it. There's often an East Coast bias towards things, you know, and watching the Weather Channel, there are times when I watch it a lot, and there are times when I don't watch it hardly at all. But a lot of times, you'll see, they'll talk about what's going on in the East, and then they quickly go over the Midwest, and all of a sudden, we're on the West Coast.
Yeah, right.
And it's like, wait a minute, what happened to us?
Right. And you are exactly right, Cheryl, about the hyperbole that's kind of become part of the way that weather is portrayed on TV, especially by companies whose entire enterprise is weather. So they add a little bit too much drama when there isn't any. When it's 42 degrees in Boston on the day after Christmas, there's no drama there. That's a boring day. And when it's 25 in Minneapolis on the 27th of December, that's also boring. If it's possible to have a boring day in Minneapolis, that's it. And so, you know, there is too much drama injected into this. And that's a little frustrating for us, too, I think, not just for the person who's, you know, getting the information. It's also frustrating for the scientist.
So in just the last few seconds here, Steve and John, looking forward to anything particular in the world of weather forecasting and satellite technology?
2013, I'm not sure we'll have any really new satellites going up. So,
yeah, and I'm not sure there's any new products that, or systems that are going to be brought online at the National Meteorological Center either, or NSEP, whatever it's called now. But I think we will continue to see excellent forecasts.
Yeah. All right. Well, Steve Ackerman and John Martin, the weather guys who come by the last Monday of every month, it's always a lot of fun, and I was especially happy to end the year talking to you too.
Yeah, same here.
Yeah, it's great.
All right. And tomorrow we'll start the new year off at 11 by talking with Rebecca Cohen about how to spend time outdoors with your kids, even in the middle of winter. She's the author of 15 Minutes Outside. And then we will talk with Terry Hope Romero, a vegan chef, about how to incorporate more plant-based foods into our diet. I'm Judith Sears Poisson. Happy New Year.